Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Welcome to the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast. Time for the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast.
Welcome to the MIP. Today on the MIP, oh my God, we got Mark Jackson. He was there the other night, and he will share with us all about that moment. We got in discussions about everything. And for me personally, I don't understand why Mark Jackson isn't coaching one of those teams in the NBA right now, and he has to explain that to me. So yeah, we're going to talk about all of that. But first, usually right here, I drop and start talking and giving you the MIP report. But the MIP report is just going to be about me, the MI. I want to share with you what my life has been like these last few days. I tweeted about it. I talked about it. I was at the University of Miami doing the Paradise Camp, the camp where they bring in all the young kids that are thinking about and wanting to go to University of Miami, and they bring all of us back. And since all of us built the University of Miami, we would all, Ray Lewis, so many great, Edgerrin James, Reggie Wayne, all the greats. We always come back because it's family. We want to show the young guys that we're family. It was so incredible, though. It was so incredible. I'll tell you this, because we had about 30 guys there, and they have about 400 kids there, and they have us all in front of about 400 kids. And they give the microphone to all of us to introduce ourselves. And we're going down the row, down the line, and these names are coming up. And all these guys, Edgerrin James, yeah, so first round draft pick. Reggie Wayne, first round draft pick. We were first round draft pick. We had about 20 first round draft picks in a row. Then, they came to me, and the first thing I said to them, I said, of course, I need not tell y'all my numbers. Y'all know my numbers. The championships, everything. And you know I'm a first round draft pick. But the number you need to know is this. Playing in the NFL is about 3 years. I've gotten in 33 years in the NFL. If you can get that, then you got something. You see what I'm saying? That's because we all just kind of, lifting ourselves up. But it was so great, man, being all around those guys, having fun like that. It's the thing that we promised we would do, but way back in the 80s when we were playing there, and we still come back, and it's still so important, and we had a great time and a great moment. Then I leave the field, and I go to my hotel, staying at the Fountain Blue. When I get to the hotel, I'm walking in, I'm tired because, I'm an old man now. You stand up on that football field a long time, running around, your back start hurting. It ain't like it used to be. I was like, man, I'm not running any routes or anything. My back is still tightening up, That's just old man stuff. So I'm thinking to myself, when I got some, I'm going right to my room and lay it down. I'm tired, But you pull up and there's so many people there. And it was my first time being in Miami since pre-pandemic. Now, I've gone to Fort Lauderdale, but I didn't go to Miami since before the pandemic. So when I got there and I got back, oh my God, there were people everywhere. And trust me, it's what I tell kids all the time when they ask me. And they say, Michael, I'm thinking about going to West Virginia or either Miami. I said, that's not even anything to think about. There's nothing you're going to do in West Virginia after those 4 years. Why go to West Virginia or a place like that where you can only feed for 4 years? If you come to Miami and play great, you can feed off that for 40 years. I'm still feeding off of it. And it's been quite a long time, and I'm still feeding off it. I try to tell these kids, get more out of what you give. Don't just get those 4 years, get way more out of it. And obviously, I'm still getting a lot out of it, because when I got out of my car at that hotel and all those people saw me, it was boom. And I thought I was so tired. I said, I'm going to just keep walking and get to the room. Then I said, no, I can't. I stopped and started taking pictures with everybody and, you know, giving them some shots and pictures and everything. And I'm going to tell you something. I sat down my bag and somehow my bag walked away. My bag was missing. My bag got missing. I was so crushed. I was so hurt and so crushed. In this bag, I had a cross that I had been building for over the last 30-something years of my life. The cross was the first down chain. It was a first down chain. It was a diamond-shaped football, all diamonds-shaped football, holding on to an all-diamond-shaped cross. On each tip of the cross are diamonds that I acquired for the birth of each one of my kids. Maisha at the top, Chelsea on the right, Michael at the bottom, Elijah on the left. I will put set of diamonds on that birth. It was just my way of always representing who I am. It's been faith, family, and football, and my little sentimental way of asking God to always please protect my babies. So I put those diamonds on each point of the star. I'm going to tell you something, man. I went into a depression after this. Let me tell you why. I blame myself so much. For the last 30 years, the one rule I made, I said, whenever I leave the house with this necklace, I don't ever take it off my neck. Like, I've kept it this long because anytime I walked out of here with it, I usually keep it in the safe with my Super Bowl rings. I don't even bring it out that much. But I took it out and I put it on. And I was wearing it, and the clamp, the little clamp on the back, came loose, and the necklace fell. I caught it in my hand, and I said, oh, okay, I have to go get this fixed. It would have taken 5 or 10 minutes for the jeweler to just tighten the clamp, and I left it in the bag. I procrastinated for about a month, knowing I need to go get it fixed, knowing I need to go get it fixed, and I procrastinated for about a month. And I took that bag with me, knowing that necklace was in there, thinking I'll run by a jeweler somewhere where I'm headed to the field or headed somewhere. I'll just let him tighten it up and everything. And I did not do it. I did not do it. And when that bag came up missing and that necklace was in that bag, oh, my God, man. Oh, I can't even tell you the low I went to. You know, I blame myself for putting it off so long. There's so many times I could have gotten that done and I didn't do it. And so as I sat there, everybody's saying, oh, man, it's so wrong with the guy. Yeah. But if I'd have done what I needed to do, this would not have happened. I've been hurting. I mean, flat out hurting about it. I tweeted about it. And everybody, I want to say this. Everybody that sent support and encouragement, man, to help pick me up, man. It was, I so appreciated. It was great and it was needed. It was needed. And I'm telling you that, that's one thing that really helped, because I'm sitting here twirling with it in my head, and everything that somebody, everything that they tweeted at me, like, Michael, you got to be blessed. Look at how far you come. Look at your life. I knew all of that. I knew it all. But I know when you're in that kind of pain, you don't trust what you're saying to yourself. And I think that's a good thing. That's a good thing, because I think that's where a lot of people, unfortunately, find themselves when we talk about even taking your own life. I think you start telling yourself things in the midst of pain that is not reality. Like, oh, there's no need for me to keep living. Nobody loves me. Oh, that's why it's so scary. It's so scary to go to that painful place. And trust what you're saying to yourself. Everything they text and tweeted at me, I knew, but I didn't trust myself. That's why I shared it with everybody else. So let me share this with everybody and see what comes back, because I didn't trust myself. And I'm telling you out there, when you are in deep pain, don't just trust your decisions. Don't trust yourself on that. You better make sure you're talking to other people and listening and hearing what they have to say and get some guidance on it, because deep pain can bring about some scary decisions, And it was interesting for me. Now, when I started getting all those calls and everything and reading everything, and I started feeling better about it, I got a call from a friend of mine who had just gotten out of the hospital, that was in the hospital for 8 months with COVID. Eight months with COVID. And I, as I'm sitting there talking to him, you know what I was thinking about? Man, everybody that did not get vaccinated should hear what he is saying. He went through 8 months in the hospital. He flatlined twice. He was telling me about him. He said, I went to heaven, Michael. He said, I opened doors. I saw rooms. There were people in rooms talking. He said, no one would talk to me, or I couldn't talk to them, but I was seeing it. And dude, I'm sitting here listening to him thinking, Oh my God, man. You know, and it's like, okay, I'm feeling bad about this necklace. And I was. But hearing him I just kept holding my chest like, oh my God, it's, you know, thank God you're okay. But it put it into perspective about, all right, you can get your butt up. Let's come on now. This man has really gone through something. He just got out of the hospital after 8 months. He's really gone through something. You could get your butt up and let this go. And I did. And I started feeling good. And each day I felt better and better. And then today, when I'm feeling good, you know, I know I'm talking to Mark Jackson. Everything's going great. I said, God, you set me back on Straight Street. It's getting good again. I'm coming back to being the old Michael. Got my workout in, feeling good. I got a phone call from the NFL. And they say, listen, we want to give you the heads up, but in about an hour and a half, we are going to announce that the Dallas Cowboys will be on this year's Hard Knocks. I said, what? What? Oh, the who on what? The Dallas Cowboys will be featured on this year's Hard Knocks. I told Alex, that's the PR guy for the NFL. I said, Alex, man, I just came out of a depression. You trying to send me back into it? Why would you tell me this? Are you joking? Do you know what this means? Oh my God, do you know what this means? The night they come on, when they come on, each week when they come on, Wednesdays are going to be a whole nother thing. Now we got to address what was played on the show on the night. That next day, everybody has to address it. Let me tell you why this puts me back in a bad spot. Zeke signed that contract. Even before that, so the last 3 to 4 years, all off seasons, everything, all we've talked about around here has been money, has been contracts. What about Zeke? We'll do Zeke deal. And then after Zeke, every year, what about Dak? What about Dak? They're going to say that Dak's going to play on the franchise tag. Oh, what's going on with that? Dak, they're going to play the franchise tag again. Okay, all of that. We talked about this for years, and I've been saying, you can't pop up and win a championship. You got to be directed to win a championship. And it doesn't start in September. It has to start in March, April, and May. It has to start in the conversations you're having. You're connecting each player, everybody. We're connecting spirit to spirit right here. We're going to have these conversations about what we're going to do. And then we're going to go get it done. And every time it gets hard, and we will find these hard spots, and you're going to have hard spots throughout a season. You're going to have valleys. You're going to have every time that valley hits, you see, because the road to a Super Bowl is never paved smoothly. It's paved with peaks and valleys. And most people can handle the peak. It's the valley that tears people apart. But if you're talking about winning championships in March, in April, and in May, and in June, and in July, and in August, when you hit September and you hit a valley, the valley that tears most teams apart, it brings you closer together because the conversations you've had all offseason, the valley, you say, man, hey, you remember what we talked about? You remember what we talked about? And as long as you hit a valley and come closer together, you can come out of the valley. If you hit a valley and everybody starts pointing fingers because we didn't have those damn conversations and everybody starts saying it's his fault. Oh, it's him, because we didn't get connected with these conversations, then you got nothing and everything falls apart. I was so happy that now that we got the Dak deal done, all of the distractions are out of the way, and now the Cowboys can move forward and go do what they're about to do and win a Super Bowl and get to where they want to be. And then I got that phone call about Hard Knocks. God darn. You guys know we're in, and I know the camera's everywhere. The camera's everywhere. But we're in a different world. This is the Instagram world. Everybody, we got everybody Instagram posting this. Now, there will be cameras around them all the time. Because those Hard Knock cameras, they get access that regular cameras just don't get. You know, at a certain time in practice, you bring all the cameras out, everybody will film in practice. Then they send everybody out. You can't film anymore. They send out the media. So whatever else going on, you can focus on what's going on here. Now, you don't send out those Hard Knock cameras. They stay in and they follow you. And people get act differently sometimes when cameras are around. And they're going to have to pick out certain people to try to connect you to the show. So they'll pick out certain rookies and almost make them a star because you'll follow those certain rookies and see if they're going to make it. I just want you to focus on winning games. I didn't want you to focus on winning games. And I wanted to minimize the distraction. And now every day after the show comes on, the next day, it'll be all about what did we see at the Cowboys practice? What are we, as opposed to talking about what do we need to do to win a championship? That is why this almost kicked me back into that depression. I got to fight it through. I can only imagine what it would have been like if we would have been on Hard Knocks. I'm just saying, I can only imagine. But darn it, man, this is going to be a crazy crazy show because just so much interest in the Cowboys. It's going to be a crazy show. And you know what else I know? I still got a camera right now, right here in my office from the season. I still got a camera in my office. Hold on. You see that right there? Y'all hear who just FaceTimed me? This is Fresh West right here, the guy that runs the New York Knicks. Why are you FaceTiming me right now, Fresh West, while I'm doing my podcast, buddy? You know what? I was just talking to Mark Jackson about the Knicks and the job that you guys are doing over there. We just got off the phone 2 seconds ago. What's up, my brother?
Well, I was just seeing what kind of fireworks you're going to spark up this week. I just want to check on you.
Fresh, I should be in New York with you, man. Now, you this microphone is hot, so I don't want to put you out there like, you know what I'm saying. But especially when you start talking about what kind of fireworks I'm sparking up this weekend, you know what I'm saying? But it's all good, man. This is my dude, too, y'all. I love this dude, man. Fresh West right here. He and I go way back to the Miami days when I went. I was telling him earlier, Fresh, about when I went to that game and you put me right on that front row and Julius Randle came over and hugged me right before the game, man. Tear welled up in my eyes and all of that. And just to go back over it all. And even to watch the position you're in. Now, let me tell y'all about Fresh right here. Let me tell y'all while I got him on the phone. Fresh, this was Fresh. When we were in college, and Fresh was on the sideline with us all the time. He was Fresh West. Now he's Worldwide West. See, when we had him, he was Fresh West. But now, after we leave, he go to Jordan and everybody. Now he's Worldwide West. Let me tell you what I used to do. I was just a young buck, too. I used to come over to him right before we go out on the field. Fresh, you could tell him, I used to, hey, listen, man, we're getting ready to go out on this field right now. I said, you want some pub? I said, at the end of this drive, I'm going to score a touchdown, and I'm going to run right over here. You come on over here and just stand behind me and get all the cameras work. I'm just telling him how mad I am about Hard Knocks, but I use those same cameras. I used to say, Wes, just stay by me. Wes said, okay, playmaker, I'm going to find you. Don't worry, I'm going to find you. Go score. I would go ahead. Wes, when I scored that touchdown, where were you at, Wes?
Right there with you. And when you won Super Bowls, I was right there with you, playmaker.
You were right there. I kept Fresh on right there on TV, man. He's my great friend, man. I love him to death, man. I'm so proud of the work he's doing with the Knicks, man, right now with New York Knicks. I told him that, man. I just love you, brother. I'm just so happy for you.
You too, playmaker. You know that. Hey, Jimmy Johnson's favorite play was playmaker down and out, baby. See you at the end zone.
And we go make it work, Fresh. We go make it work. All right, Fresh, let me get back to work, man. I'll hit you later, man. I'll hit you later. Hey, man, I just wanted to peek in on that. Just give y'all a peek. All of it. It lifts me up. I'm sure Fresh, he probably read that. He read that the text I sent out, that tweet. So he's calling to check on me. I got a lot of my guys calling to check on me, man. But yeah, I'm just sharing with y'all. Listen, I don't know. I'm a little worried about the Hard Knock stuff. We'll see how it all plays out. But I guarantee you, all this means it's going to be great ratings for Hard Knocks, but a great amount of distractions that we'll have to talk about now for the Dallas Cowboys when I wanted them to be, as much as they could, distraction-free and focus on championships. Speaking of championships, let's talk to Mark Jackson, this man, because he watched Chris Paul and the Suns make the finals and have an opportunity to get their championship. Mark Jackson on the MIP next. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com. Joining the MIP, you hear him all the time doing games, and he does such a great job. Him and his partner, Van Gundy, over there. They're funny people on the broadcast. This man hailed from Brooklyn, New York, played his college days at St. John's, and then got drafted right there by his hometown team, the New York Knicks, in 1987, the number one draft pick for the Knicks. He became Rookie of the Year. He built the foundation of that dynasty that you guys knew as the Golden State Warriors. Joining the MIP, the Mike Orvin podcast, is my friend, Mark Jackson. Mark, hey, man, thanks for taking the time, buddy.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me. You're a legend and somebody I got great respect for, so appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, but it always warms my heart when people I respect the way I respect you give me that kind of love, Mark. Well, let's just start right here, man, because you were there the other night. You were there. You called the game. Chris Paul returning to L.A. and playing the type of game he played to get to his first NBA Finals in a 16-year career. Talk about that moment, man, and bring us into it.
Well, it was a great moment. I mean, you were fortunate enough to play a long time and win championships. And you know what it's like, the chase, the pursuit of greatness, of winning it individually and collectively. Chris Paul has had heartbreak after heartbreak, fighting, being a pro, working his tail off, being one of the all-time great, not just point guards, but players in the history of this game. And he's fallen short. And matter of fact, not just fallen short, but at crucial times, whether it be being hurt or whether it be an up 3-1 collapsing. Whatever the reason is, they've fallen short. So to watch him accomplish it this time, and especially after not playing well, I said going into the last game, if I was Chris Paul and you asked me what type of shots or what type of defense you're going to play against me to allow me to take shots, it would be the defense that the Clippers was playing. He was missing shots. You look at all those games. He got good looks, mid-range jump shots. He was missing. Sooner or later, he was going to knock down the shots that he's made his entire life. And it just so happened on the biggest stage with the brightest lights, he put on an absolute clinic.
It that blows my mind, Omar. The whole way this thing played out. I mean, it's like, this is why you got to love sports, man. You can't write these stories, man. Like, okay, you're playing. Chris Paul was playing great. He gets COVID. He misses the first two games in Phoenix. He comes back playing in his own at his old place, and he doesn't play well. And then you have a closeout game in Phoenix that you don't play well in, and you couldn't close out. You don't close out there, and you come back, and it's all those things you just brought up, right? All of those got there this close and did not make it. To hear him, to see him step up and say, "No, not this time." It was incredible to watch. Let me tell you what when I'm watching the game, buddy, because I heard you, Mark, when you were talking about Paul George. Right here, this moment, you got to be aggressive. You were talking about him being aggressive, you know, in that moment. But Chris Paul, he was aggressive in that moment. It was him saying, "No way I'm going to go away this time without getting that accomplishment." It was a crazy, beautiful thing to watch.
And they did it the right way. Great leadership in their head coach in Monty Williams, who's an incredible guy who's done an incredible job leading that team. You're talking about the tough part of changing a culture, a team that hadn't won in forever and hadn't even made the playoffs in forever. You add Chris Paul. Devin Booker's the best player, the franchise talent. His humility to allow Chris Paul to take over games. He's not over there pouting, demanding the ball, waving his hands. He allows him to do him. It's a collective energy that they have where they support one another, and they're all about winning no matter what it takes to win. And it's refreshing to watch. And the thing I want to point out, they understand, Chris Paul included, it was great to get to the finals, but that's not their end game. Right. So they celebrated for the moment. they have their eye on the ultimate prize, which is the championship.
Yeah, but to get that championship, you know, of course, you look over there, what's going on in the East now. First, before we get to that, you talked about it. Chris Paul been battling a few injuries here. Devin Booker, broken nose, battling some injuries. A couple things in here. When you look around and you see all of the injuries that have gone on in this playoffs, what are your thoughts towards that? Why is that?
It's unfortunate. I think the why, it depends on the person or the injury that we're talking about. Some guys, because it's a shortened season and the turnaround was quick. Some guys, because they didn't prepare the way they're supposed to prepare. Some guys, because it's just a freak injury. So it depends on who we're talking about. And I'm not one of those guys that say, well, you know, they were put in a bad situation. No, they make a lot of money. And they don't have the luxuries, or they have the luxuries that you and I back in our day didn't have. And I'm talking about, the way they fly, the way they eat. And I'm not hating. I'm just speaking facts.
The way they're
taken care of, whether it be a masseuse, whether it be the weightlifting, the trainers, whether it be eating properly with a chef, all the things that they have to put them in position. I went from playing my rookie year to going the very next day back on concrete in the park playing in the hood. And I didn't get hurt. So it was the way that I prepared myself. It's just tough injuries. But I'm a guy that this is a fantastic time when it comes to professional sports, in particular professional basketball. And it's unfortunate some of the best players in the world have gotten injured, but that's part of the game. You don't just win a championship because of your talent. You have to be healthy also.
And you know, Mark, and I hear people too, because I hear people even now. Hey, you know, a lot of the guys got hurt. This will taint this championship. I'm like, no, it does. That's always been part of the game. It's always been a war of attrition. You got to get that. It's been every year. It's been like that all the time. I don't want to hear. Yeah, I said Coach Johnson one time, Mark. Right, we were getting ready to play somebody. I was like, man, I hate somebody was hurt. Man, I want them at full strength. Coach Johnson looked at me and said, "Hey, son, we want to get there. How we can get there? Can't worry about all of that."
That's the truth.
That's just ego talking.
That's right.
In the end, when you get that ring on your finger, ain't nobody going to be talking about who was hurt and all of that, you know. So I do find that interesting.
Give me whatever it takes to win it.
Give me whatever it takes. But how interesting is that, though? All of these, Lakers, Brooklyn, all of these so-called organized super teams that you got in the league and vying for championships, that the teams and whichever team ends up playing the Suns in the finals, all of these teams, they drafted guys and added a veteran if they could here and there. You know what I mean? With all this, in the era of the super teams, these teams happen to end up going to a finals. Man, what does that say?
It's tremendous. And to me, I don't care what type of talent you have, and you can attest to this, you are your habits, how you prepare, how you practice, how you take care of your body. At the end of the day, we can disrespect the Phoenix Suns all we want. If they happen to win a championship, they've been over the course of a 72-game season, they've been the second-best team in basketball. The Utah Jazz had the best record, and the Phoenix Suns had the second-best record. They're going to have home court advantage in the NBA Finals and in the conference finals, no matter who they faced in all of basketball outside of the Utah Jazz. So they've had a body of work that tells you that this is an elite basketball team that's more than capable of winning it at all. We just ignored it because they don't have the sexy, you know, the guys, the sexy choices as far as the franchise talent. We even disrespect Devin Booker. Chris Paul is great. Chris Paul is an all-time great. He's a Hall of Famer. Devin Booker is the best player on the Phoenix Suns, with all due respect.
No,
but we ignore him. The dude had to wait for somebody to be injured to be an all-star this year. How disrespectful can we be? And he does everything you want a professional, big-time franchise player to do. He embraces the spotlight, does it with great humility, works his tail off, and is the ultimate pro. And it's a joy to watch. You sit down and you interview these guys, and you see them deflect. Monty Williams, you tell you, well, why is Chris Paul missing shots? Why is DeAndre Ayton not playing well? Why is Devin Booker struggling? You know what he says? I got to do a better job of putting him in position to be successful. That's on me. It's deflecting the criticism on his guys and pointing on himself. You ask Chris Paul, he never says coach tripping. No, that's on me. I got to be better. Devin Booker, same thing. And you have that mentality, that approach, it becomes contagious all throughout your life.
Man, I heard him do an interview with you guys the other day, man, and it sounded like that. You know, he used, you know, and you and I both are spiritual men. He used spiritual things. He talked about. He said, "Listen, I tell you guys, I'm the coach. What I have to do is serve all of these guys." He said, "I got to serve these guys. They're talented. They're gifted. My job is to bring the best out of them. I have to make sure I get to bring the best out of them. So when I'm getting on them, it's not because, you know, I'm trying to show them up. It's just that I believe that they have more in them and I'm trying to bring it out of them." Coach, when I heard it, I was like, dude's answer to that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? When a man can talk to you like that, listen, man, I'm just I see something great in you. I'm trying to serve you and bringing the best out of you. You get played for that, and that's why that team is just taking off. I mean, it's taking off all around. You mentioned Aiden, and you mentioned Aiden. He's been fantastic in these playoffs, man. He's been incredible. And Devin Booker, they're comparing him to the great and late Kobe Bryant. Talk to me about that comparison before you tell me about DeAndre Ayton.
Well, first of all, I'm not even going to get into that comparison. With all due respect to Devin Booker, who's a great player, franchise talent, and a future Hall of Famer, and on his way to doing great things even moving forward. There's one Kobe Bryant, the same way there was one Michael Jordan. So I'm not even going to disrespect a guy that won a championship against me, and I watched him and covered him and witnessed the greatness of Kobe Bryant. It is too early for me to put anybody that's playing today in the conversation with the late, great Kobe Bryant. I mean, you talking about a dude that had it all, and when the lights got brightest, put on a clinic. I mean, I watched him put, you know, he had a run of about 10 games with 40 to 50 points straight. Three of them was against my team, and we were determined not to let him get it. So I know what Kobe Bryant, how great he was, and I'm not going to disrespect him or even disrespect Devin Booker and put him – here's a guy that wears on his shoe the quote that Kobe Bryant told him, be legendary. Kobe Bryant inspired him. That's his guy. He'd be the first to tell you, don't put me in that category. And it's respectful, but it's not the time.
And, Coach, I did that in our NFL season, man. I said, you know, we do guys a disservice and doing that all the time. Already, we got Patrick Mahomes being the next Tom Brady. I was like, we need to stop this, man. Stop. Let's stop. Because now if Patrick Mahomes goes and wins four Super Bowls, we're going to say his career, he didn't fulfill the potential of his career because Tom Brady won seven. I'm like, stop. You know what I mean? we start dragging people into that, which I think is crazy too. So I am with you on that. This East over here, Coach, we talked about these injuries, man. This East and how do you see it playing out? Last night, you saw the game last night without Giannis and without Trae Young, and the Bucks showed up and won that game. How do you see that series playing out?
Well, it's been a great series, and I think it's far from over. I would have said, you know, Atlanta was going to win the previous game, because if you're the Milwaukee Bucks and you find out just before the game, and you know about this, you find out just before the game that Trae Young's not playing. You let your guards down and you think, oh, we're going to steamroll these boys. They're not ready. And all of a sudden, you got a guy like Lou Williams who has the ability to beat Trae Young on a given night. It's late in his career, but he has the ability to win a game. And that's exactly what he did. And the rest of the guys followed with the ability to take over and make shots. And they had a big win. Now you look at last night's game and the same thing, but the other way. The Atlanta Hawks thinking, well, we're going to steamroll them again without Trae. You need your home run hitter. That happened that night, not last night. And all of a sudden, you get a Milwaukee Bucks team that's on alert because of what took place the previous game, and they're ready. So they won the game, and I think it's going to be a tremendous game six, and it's going to be tough to close out the Atlanta Hawks in their building. And hopefully, you know, if you're an Atlanta Hawks fan, you get Trae Young back, so you get a guy healthy and whole. And if you're a Milwaukee Bucks fan, you hope that at some point Giannis can come back, but it's been fun to watch.
Yeah, and it's fun to watch for me too. And I watched last night. Then I watched the interview, and I watched the guys ask Drew Holiday, because Drew Holiday played a fantastic game last night. I mean, he played a fantastic game. But they asked him, and it was some interesting, Mark. Because one thing I've always loved about you, Mark, was from that point guard, you were a dog. You were aggressive. Mark. You were one of the first point I used to see. I used to watch you go down in the post and grab him in the post. And he posted. I said, you know, and head to that. And they asked Drew Holiday about it. They were like, you know, why are you aggressive tonight, man? Why are you not aggressive all the time? And he said, you're right. Like, everybody tells me that all the time. And I'm thinking, like, what do you mean everybody tells you that all the time? Why would he not? And I was trying to get in his head, like, why would you not be aggressive? Or why in that situation, that position, why wouldn't he be aggressive like he was last night all the time?
It's tough because some guys, with all due respect, are not cut from that same cloth. Now he's always aggressive when it comes to getting defensive stops, picking up a guy and taking pride. He's got a gift. He's one of the best defenders in all of basketball. I think sometimes as a player, he's a little bit too tentative. And you've been around it. You know, there's some guys that need that hype man. There's some guys that need that guy in his ear chirping, saying, come on, man. Come on. We're waiting for you. What you doing? You're not just a regular dude out there. There's some guys that need inspiration from whether it be the guy in the suit and the tie or the guy in uniform to get him going. And that's all that Drew Holiday needs, because he's doing a disservice to himself and the team if he's playing passive. You're too good to be a regular dude out on the floor. And I like what you said. The question was presented. He ain't say you tripping. Why are you asking me that question? Right. You know who I am.
Right.
He said you're right. You're 100% correct. That's right. Humility. That's owning it. And then then embracing it and responding to it.
Because now you got a chance at correcting it. You receive.
Absolutely.
Now you
Absolutely.
Got a chance at correcting it. All right. Because I remember telling Hart when he was leaving to go to Tampa, I said, hey, man, now you're the big dog now. It's different being the big dog. Because before,
right.
all you had to do, when I came to you, I was like, let's go. It's time to go, man. What's going on? Let's go. You know, you had to come on up here. Now you got to be the one that set the bar,
that's
not
right.
the one just reaching up and grabbing the bar. And that's a
right.
whole different thing. And everybody's
a different
not
ball game.
Everybody's not cut for that cloth. When you see guys like you talking about it, and that's why it's so special when I see a Mark Jackson taking people down and posting it up. That's saying cut from the cloth. Or like you talk about a Kobe Bryant, like, man, no matter what you do, this dude ain't going for it.
Right. I can remember coaches. You're talking about Kobe. Coach would be like, okay, let's go back to that play in the fourth quarter. Let's save it. The mentality of the Kobe's like, no, let's run that until they stop it. Let's run it all night long. We ain't saving it. Ain't no reason in saving it. Nothing they can do about it. So the material that he's cut from is totally different. And there's two guys in the history of professional basketball that, to me, are cut from a cloth that's just them. And that's Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, where two guys would be willing to die on the floor to get the results that they wanted.
Now, you know, when people hear this, Mark, and then you say Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, somebody going to say, what about LeBron? What about LeBron? You don't see LeBron in that same area?
No, I see LeBron as an all-time great player. Here's a guy that will leave the game as the all-time leading scorer and a top five assist man in the game. Here's a guy that will be in the discussion for the greatest player that's ever played, with Michael Jordan and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and other guys involved, Kobe Bryant and the people you want to throw in there, he will be in the discussion. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying willing to die on the court. I'm not disrespecting LeBron. Guess what? I'm not disrespecting myself. I'm not willing to die on the basketball court for a win. So I'm not saying anything, taking a shot at him. I'm really giving him a compliment as far as being versed on other things in life. Those other two dudes, it was about chasing down to be great and winning on the court.
Mark, I was willing to die on the field, Mark. And when you were saying it, man, I'm going to tell you, I wore number 80 in high school because I thought that's what Kellen Winslow showed me in that playoff game against Miami when they had
Absolutely.
To carry him off the field. And then he came back to catch another third down. And then he had cramped up and they had to carry him off. And then they give him some oxygen. He came back and blocked the kick. I was like, man, we talk about it. You hear coaches talk about it. Man, you got to be willing to give it all you got.
Right.
That was it. To this day, Mark, to this day, every year I go to the Hall of Fame, I go by Kellen Winslow's bust and talk to him about that game. Just that game. That was it for me. That was it. Because that was the game. I was like, that. If I can play a game like that, then God can take me now. I'm going to go shake his hand. sit down next to him. You know what I'm saying?
I can see you talking trash to God. Boy, I was nice, boy. You see me put my hand up and let them know I was wide open? I caught that thing in stride. I can see you talking trash to God, telling him just how special you was on that night.
That would have been that to me, that would be heaven. That's how you would leave this place. If I'm leaving like that, that'll be the greatest place, the greatest way to leave this place. We don't know who's going out of the East, and we'll find that out here pretty soon. But if it's Milwaukee, how do you see the finals? If it's Milwaukee and the Suns, how would you see the finals? Or if it's Atlanta and the Suns, how would you see the finals playing out?
I think either way is going to be a great series. And I see it'll be, you know, hopefully it'll be with star power on the Eastern Conference side, where Giannis and Trae Young is back healthy and whole, whichever guy happens to be fortunate enough to get to the finals. I see it being a tough, long, worn out, dragged out series. I think the Phoenix Suns are going to be tough to beat because they're tied together. They show great humility. They share the basketball. They defend at a high level. They have a big man that has the ability to defend the pick and roll and also protect the rim. And then he, on the offensive end, he's not a guy that you can expose by not defending him. You'll pay the price by not protecting the paint, rebounding the basketball. And also he has a nice skill level as far as post-up. So Phoenix Suns are going to be tough to beat no matter who comes out the East.
Yeah, and I got them winning that championship too. And I think it's incredible, and that'd be great. Chris Paul to get that opportunity. And I think it's important that Milwaukee at least get there. Atlanta, it's been a successful season for them already. You can't and the job that Nate has done over there coaching, it's just been an incredible job. You know, and speaking of coaching, Mark, I'm shocked. You do a great job, man. A great job. You and Van Gundy, you guys do a great job. But I'm shocked that you never went back to coaching after the job you did and did so well, I thought, with Golden State. Why is that, Mark?
Well, it's because I'm not hiring. I'm not the one doing the hiring. I loved my opportunity for 3 years coaching the Golden State Warriors. I didn't do it individually, but collectively we turned a team that for 19 straight years made the playoffs one time, and then all of a sudden they become a dynasty. I was part of establishing and helping to build the culture. You're talking about guys like Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green that changed the game. I'm proud of those guys. And they will be part of, you know, my resume for the rest of my life. But at the end of the day, the 3 years I embraced, we had success. And I love coaching, and I still love coaching, and I look forward to one day having an opportunity to do what I finish what I started in Golden State somewhere.
Come on, man. Listen, I hear what you're saying, buddy, and I appreciate how you're saying it. But honestly, that's ridiculous for you not to have had another opportunity after the job you did with that opportunity. Like you said, it's not like that thing ended up a wreck. That you built the foundation for, and that thing took off. It blows my mind personally, buddy. And I just have to say it. And I there's something, I don't know what it is, but it blows my mind that is.
No, thank you.
Yeah, it really is, Mark. Speaking of blowing my mind, Mark, you look back at that class, your draft class. I was looking at it today. Listen, let me tell you something. We're speaking of all of these so-called super teams. This would have been a super team. You had David Robinson at center. You know, you come back with a Horace Grant at the four. You start a Scottie Pippen at the three. You see what I'm saying? And then put a Reggie Miller at the two. And then come back with you. And Kenny Smith, I'll put Kenny Smith coming off the bench. You had the one, and Kenny Smith coming off the bench.
Okay, and there's another guy that should be in the Hall of Fame point guard in that same draft, of Kevin Johnson.
And KJ.
Yeah, NKJ. Absolutely. So, I mean, we it was a loaded draft with a lot of talent. Muggsy Bogues was also drafted there. Bogues, I mean, it was some incredible talent, and I'm just, you know, fortunate enough to have been included in that draft, one that will go down in history as one of the best.
See what I mean? That's what I mean now. See what I'm saying? See, and you are fortunate to be in there, but you were more than just fortunate. You went in and got Rookie of the Year with that class. You won Rookie of the Year with that class, man. Do you not look back and say, wow, to me, that's an accomplishment. With those kind of guys, and these are Hall of Fame guys, and you coming in with 18 pick, winning Rookie of the Year. To go back to that day, and now that you look back on it, what did it mean to you to actually win with that kind of a class?
Well, it really meant everything. I had teams before the 18th pick where the Knicks was picking that promised that if I was on the board, they were going to take me. They lied to me, which is okay. That's part of the business. But it allowed me to have a chip on my shoulder. But I would not have been Rookie of the Year if I had not been blessed and fortunate enough to play with the Hall of Fame center and Patrick Ewing that embraced me, and a Hall of Fame head coach in Rick Pitino that allowed me to play through mistakes. If you made me a young kid coming into the league and I threw a behind the back pass and went out of bounds and you said, sit down, you're not playing no more, that's a bad pass, all of a sudden you strip who I am and you take away some of my confidence. I had a head coach that allowed me to make mistakes, allowed me to play through mistakes, and embraced me and gave me an opportunity. And it propelled a young kid to not only win Rookie of the Year, but played 17 years in the league. He instilled that in me and believed in me. So I'm extremely fortunate. And to go back and look at that draft and say I was the Rookie out of that draft, it just like looking at a list of all-time leading assist men in the history of the game. I got no business on that list. I'm well back of the names and the history and the greatness that's included on the list. To be even in the middle of it, you know, it's almost like the old game would say, one of these things is not like the other. I'm that thing that's not like the other. I'm aware of it, but I'm also, it makes me realize how awesome God is and how if you just turn it over to him, what he can do in your life.
You know, it's so interesting when you say how the coach played, you know, let you be you. He helped, you know, accentuate who you are. When I watch this year's Rookie of the Year, I'm like, okay, they're letting him, LaMelo Ball.
Right.
They're letting him be him. He was making some serious passes, man. You know what I mean? LaMelo Ball, he's the real deal, is he, coach?
He is absolutely the real deal. And what I love about him, he embraces, again, the bright lights. He embraces the pressure.
Aggressive with it. You're right, coach.
He's had the bright lights and the pressure his entire life. You look at when he was, with all due respect, a nobody, the youngest kid on the ball show. He right. was the one that was drawing the cameras because of the crazy things he'd say or do and the way he would respond. He's a guy that just wants to be great no matter what area you put him in, and he's fun to watch. And that's the type of guys that, you know, become your favorite players, and because of the comments they make, because of the flair and the style and the aggressiveness in which they play. And he's just absolutely, you know, he's the Rookie of the Year, deserves it, and hopefully he stays healthy and whole and continues to grow and mature and do special things on the court.
And coach, it also goes back to some of the stuff we talked about earlier, that willing to die, what's deep down inside, what's engrafted in you. Look, with LaMelo, it's all, it's deep down inside engrafted in him. Now, but I will do it. His brother has talent. Lonzo has talent. But I don't think he has that deep down stuff that LaMelo has. You know, he's aggressive. This kid, I watched, I was like, this kid is going to be real special. And it's so funny because he's always the youngest. You know, he's been fighting all life. He's been fighting to get noticed even in his own house. So you know he's willing to fight out here, fighting these other dudes. I love watching that kid play, man. I love watching him play.
Well, to me, and I understand your point, I think we overlook the body of work that Lonzo has been able to put together, whether it be his rookie year with the Lakers, whether it be the rest of his career, including playing with New Orleans. His numbers are there. He's an improved shooter, so he puts the time in. I think he's an outstanding young basketball player, a starting point guard that can be in position to start for a championship-caliber team. Defends at a high level. Great passer, improved shooter, great competitor. I'd like to see him more aggressive offensively. And I think we also should give credit to the dad, LeVar, who we made fun of collectively as a people. And we pointed and said, that's not how you raise. He has raised two young men that are not only stamped to be pros for a long time, but no issues. They're quality people. They're quality individuals. He's got a lot to be proud of and should be saluted.
Reminds me of Venus and Serena Williams' dad. Remember how we got on him, man? And he was like, yeah, he looks like a madman. Or he looks like a madman now, but the product, what he worked out. And everybody said he didn't end up looking like a madman, because everybody, that thing turned out great for them. Coach, before I let you go, I got to ask about this, man, because you brought it up, Golden State Warriors. These last two teams I want to ask about, Golden State Warriors. I saw somewhere where they were trying to go get Pascal Siakam, and I was like, oh, my God, they get them. They're right back. If they get him, it right back in the thick of that. Where do you think Golden State goes from here?
Well, they're in a great position because you have a superstar, an all-time great in Steph Curry. You have an outstanding, winner in Draymond Green. You have a healthy Klay Thompson coming back at some point. And then you have assets, the ability with your draft choices or young talent to go out and acquire guys that's ready to win today. So they're in an ideal situation if you're a Warriors fan trying to assemble another run to win a championship. They're going to be scary moving forward. They are absolutely going to be scary moving forward.
Yeah, they are. And I can't wait to see them get back up and get Klay back, because I think Klay's one of the – I told Klay he's one of my favorite players in the NBA. And if I was starting a team, I would really consider starting it with him, because he plays so well on both ends of the floor. Now, I got to tell you this, Coach, and I know you saw it a lot. Man, I was there. I was sitting at home watching when they had that first playoff game in the Garden. And then I'm sitting home watching, and I thought to myself, I'm rich. Why am I here? I should be there. So of course, I called my man, Fresh West. I said, Wes, come on, man. I'm coming to this game. I was there when Atlanta won and went on. But, Coach, I was sitting right there on the edge of this, right in front row of court. Julius Randle, who went to school right up his street, went to school with my son, and I watched him grow up. Man, they were getting ready to tip the ball off. He ran over. He held the game up, ran over and hugged me and said, hey, man, I'm so glad. Thanks for coming, man. Appreciate all you've done. Man, I almost broke down crying.
That's right.
As you get older, Coach.
Keep on living. That's right. Keep on living. That's right.
Oh, it makes a huge difference, man. I was like, oh, my God, man. That touched me so much, man. It was an incredible moment for me. It really was.
I'm shocked you said you almost cried. If that's me, I'd have been there wiping with my napkin in my eyes, wiping tears rolling down my – because that's him appreciating greatness, and it's you not looking for it. But, it does something on the inside of you that when people acknowledge how you've impacted them, even though that's not what you're looking for.
Right.
And, to you – and I'm like Julius Randle, even – doing this podcast, when you reach out and say, I'm like, what? The playmaker? There's no doubt about it. I witnessed greatness, and I watched you how you battled adversity and became a champion on and off the field. And to me, it should be recognized, saluted, and acknowledged as a lesson of how to be an all-time great, not just player, but person.
Coach, I appreciate that, Coach. I really do, Coach. Coach, I want those Knicks to get to where they want to be. I want them to get back, man. And I think this is a big offseason for them. Do you think the Knicks will get back in that spot? What do you think what do you think the Knicks need? I'll ask you that way. What else do you think the Knicks need right now to take that next step?
Well, they've done an outstanding job last year, with Leon Rose, with Worldwide West,
right,
Tom Thibodeau. They got great leadership. They established a culture, and they won this year by outworking everybody on the court. So in a 72-game season, you outwork people and you win games that you're not supposed to. I think the difference is moving forward, you're not going to trick people, outwork people the rest of the way moving forward. So the thing that I would encourage them to do is find a way to increase your talent. You got to get home run talent, because in this league, you win with talent. You have to have guys 1 through 5, 1 through 12, 1 through 15 that you know what you're going to get from them every single night. And that's what happened in the playoffs. Atlanta had more guys that they knew what they was going to get than the Knicks did. I know that Bogdanovich is a shooter. I know that Kevin Huerter is a shooter. I know Clint Capela is a screener and a finisher at the rim and a defender. I know that Trae Young is a shooter. So John Collins is a shooter, defender, slasher, a lob threat. So you have to fill your roster with guys that are home run talent, and you know exactly what you're going to get. But they're on the right path because winning and experience, as you know, that building like that with 20,000 plus going crazy, supporting you becomes, you know, you want more. The disease of greed. I want more of that. I can't wait to the playoff time. And it inspires you and puts you in position where I want to be great. And I not only want to make the playoffs, but I want to now advance. I want to now win a championship. And that's got to be their mentality. But they have the right people in position to do it.
Yeah, and I will be there next year when they get it all going again. Coach, thanks for taking the time, man. I appreciate you giving me so much time and always giving me the great stuff.
Man, love and appreciate you, man. Thank you for everything.
All right, Coach, keep doing that great job, man. You and Jeff, y'all some funny dudes.
Yes, sir. He's the best.
Y'all make the game great, man. You just make the game great. You make it palatable for all people. Not just the crazy basketball fans, but for all fans. And I love how you bring the game to life, man. You really do. So just keep up the great work, buddy. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you.
Thanks for downloading the MIP. Check out new episodes of the Michael Irvin Podcast every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com. Today. That's Geico.com.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. And welcome to T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. The most fun you'll ever listen to while you're folding your clothes. Now let's get this straight. This is not your average podcast. T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio is super fun, super crazy. It's pretty much an in-your-face conversation. That's the good thing about us. We don't do interviews. We do conversations. All of my guests, all of my co-hosts, we chill. We drink. We play games. We have the song of the week. We have the creative curse word of the week. As long as you're having fun as our guests. Speaking of guests, each week I'm going to go through my whole contact list and dive headfirst into the world of music, gaming, exotic cars, tech, strippers probably, doctors probably strippers that are only stripping so they can pay for tuition to become a doctor. You never know. My wife is a certified bartender. She'll make you a drink while you're here. We'll get you drunk and make you play VR after. It's a lot going on, but that's what it's all about over here at T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. See you soon, baby!